Is it the Misfit Network or the Misfire Network?
It's
or
the Misshift.
The Misshift.
The Misshift.
The Misshift.
The Misshift.
Did anybody look up if the domain was available? Is it?
As far as like YouTube channels and Instagrams, nobody's using it.
Okay.
You know, for websites and merch.
Yeah, we need that for merch.
Well,
if we decide to monetize this podcast.
When we blow up.
Yeah, when we get more than 500 followers. So,
yes.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that is our introduction. Hello, everyone. This is the Misshifts Podcast. To my left, I have Jeremy, and to my right, I have James.
Hello.
I am Miles, and we're just going to go ahead and jump in. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is our first one, so we're just going to start off with some brief introductions, and then we're going to get into the beginning of it all, how we all became car guys, and how we, you know, how we ended up here.
Yeah, in California.
Right. Yeah. Very far away from home for actually all of us. I think we're all...
Oh, we're all transplants?
Yeah. Yeah, we're all East Coasters. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm from the Midwest.
Well, I am a Midwester too, okay. But everybody's like...
East. From East.
We're from the East.
From East of the Mississippi.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We were not West Coasters to begin with. I guess I'll start off. So, Miles, as we all know, I currently work for Volkswagen Group at an R&D facility out here in the Bay, doing very secret car things, not so secret. but I'm more in the prototyping world and things that are to come rather than things that are out right now. Jeremy, what do you do? Give us a little, where are you at right now? And
I'm Jeremy. I don't know that I want to say where I am right now.
You don't want to share where you work at?
I don't know.
You could say undisclosed, auto group.
I do work in the automotive industry locally.
Is there a particular focus that you have?
Yes. So I lead a team that works on high voltage charging products.
Okay.
For a local auto manufacturer.
Perfect. I couldn't have thought of a better description.
By process of elimination, you could probably figure that out.
Maybe you could figure that out, but
I don't know. There's a few in the Bay Area.
There are more than you think.
Yeah. Definitely more than you think. I guess I'll go next.
Yeah. How about
yes.
You?
I'm James. I'm not in the automotive industry, but I've been in marketing for, I don't know, 13, 14 years now. Obviously very passionate about cars. I've owned a lot of cars over time. I actually worked at a Bentley dealership starting out very early on in my career. I have a lot of stories about that. And I live in San Francisco. It's pretty fun.
Yay.
I think we're going to have to do an episode sometime about all of the cars we've owned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I bet there's some pretty interesting ones.
Yeah. I mean, we can kind of get into it a little bit here. We can go over them, but maybe go deeper later on.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll start out. I'll talk about how I kind of got into cars, how we became car people. So grew up in the Midwest, grew up in Detroit. I am born and raised from Detroit, Michigan. Shout out to all my Detroiters out there. And my Michiganders, Detroit is known as the Motor City. So we grew up with the big three. I'm pretty sure almost all of my family members, currently, past, former, present, have worked for or worked at either Ford, General Motors, or Chrysler.
Oh, wow.
My sister currently works on the F-150 line. So she is putting together all of those pickups for you guys.
Wow.
Little skinny mini herself. But when I was young, my dad was kind of in the cars, you know, was like, oh yeah, I'll just go get the fastest kind of cheap muscle car at the time. Yeah. I know he's told me stories about his Monte Carlos and other things. But when I was born, he had a 2002 Ford True Blue Mustang GT, the 4.6.
Okay.
SN95.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of the start of it. That's a very slow car by today's standards. But it was the car that kind of introduced me into the car world, you know, that shaky V8 and like, you know, rolling through the gears. I had a 5-speed and it was always really fun to watch him drive it. And he drove it so fast all the time with all of us in it.
Made good sounds.
Yeah, no, they sounded. You know,
yeah.
They sounded great. They just weren't.
They didn't have, I don't think they had an independent rear suspension, right? That was only the SVT Cobra.
Yes, they had
the 03 SVT Cobra.
That didn't come till much later, I don't think, did it?
What, IRS?
IRS came way later, like the S550, right?
Yes, the S550 was the first mass-produced, you know, where the base Mustang had IRS. But you could get IRS on SN95 Cobras and stuff like that. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Tangent.
No, car it's guy okay. Tangent. This is how it's going to go. We're here to have fun. But pretty much, I grew up, I was born in 1998, so I'm young, guys. Bear with me.
Baby.
I am very, very new to life.
I don't know if we want to go there.
I know. We won't mention ages past this point.
Just so that you guys have a perspective on why I like what I like. So I grew up in that Too Fast, Too Furious, you know, Need for Speed, Underground. That was my era. So I was JDM, Hot Boy, things modified to all the craziness. I mean...
What was the Eclipse in Too Fast, Too Furious? Who drove that again?
The Eclipse. Oh, Brian.
Brian. No, Brian didn't drive the Eclipse.
Yes, he did. In the first movie.
First one's a GSX.
Right.
Eclipse.
Oh, you're talking
I'm talking about the second one.
That was Tyrese.
Tyrese was like the third gen Eclipse or something.
Yeah, he had the
silver one. Yes. With like a like the...
The convertible with
Alpine,
the suede.
I think like the Alpine leather. Audio or something like that. Anyways, sorry. Another tangent.
But yeah, so I grew up with... all of that. And my dad would always like buy me whatever latest racing game kind of came out. Okay. And I just, that's where it all stemmed from. And I'm probably like the only real car guy in my family. My parents like cool cars, but they just like nice cars for the sake of this is a nice car.
Yeah.
Not so much like the performance or what it can do, but like, oh, does it have the big engine? Did it come with all the right options? Is it fast? Good, you know,
it's just cool,
right? It's just cool,
yeah.
You know, they weren't trying to, you're like, oh, how fast can I get around this corner? What are the 0 to 60 times? How many G forces is it gonna pull?
Are they button pushers? Do they like having features? I love cars with
just like
buttons to push
gadgets and gizmos, kind of thing.
I love that,
yeah.
Or is it more about speed and.
It's more about speed.
Style and speed.
My mom is a button pusher, but my parents aren't super tech savvy. They're definitely like getting in here and like, what does this do? Like, my mom has like a new Buick and it has like the little flip button transmission. And she's like, oh, this is different.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But to continue on, so growing up, just... really enjoyed everything about driving. I loved having the minivan to pick up all my friends. I loved having the Mustang to show off to all of my friends. And then it kind of began to grow and stem as I got through high school. I started to get more into racing and watching it on TV. And I was never really big into NASCAR, but I always liked touring car racing. So GT3 and GT4.
Oh, like German DTM stuff?
That type of stuff. I was like, that's very appealing, especially growing up playing Gran Turismo, which was like the gateway drug.
It's a huge influence on people for sure.
Yeah. Even more so than Need for Speed, because that really introduced you into like professional racing,
right?
You know, and what it has to offer. Right. But growing up doing all of that, I began my college career. I am a mechanical engineering student. And as much as people think that that has things to do with cars, it has nothing to do with the car.
No, it does.
But it's not automotive based. It just, I feel like a lot of people
You can concentrate on SAE. You know?
Yeah, you go to the right place, it can be.
Yeah.
Yes,
but you're right. It was not for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas it's just you're learning all the physics behind the car. But getting my ME degree, in the time of getting my ME degree, I have had a numerous of different car jobs and in and out of the automotive industry. I think my first car related job was I worked as a detailer at a Honda dealership.
Oh, fun fact.
Yes, fun fact. I was a detailer. I was wiping those cars down. And let me tell you something. Honda people are a little dirty. They just...
I'm sure. Well, that's, you know, you're driving a glorified, you know, blender, right? So how often are you going to stick it in the dishwashing machine, right? You're going to keep that thing a little dirty.
A blender.
I'm serious. Yeah, boy, I mean, that's already my opinion.
Story about a loner car at a car dealership.
Uh-oh.
Siri
is not happy right now.
She's interrupting us. Tell us about your loner story, Jeremy, and then I'll continue on about life as car people.
When I was in school, I was a lot porter at a BMW dealership in Florida, where I'm from.
Oh, cool.
And we had a fleet at the time of BMW loaner cars that was operated and maintained by the dealership. And one of them was an E39, I'm aging myself, 5-series wagon.
Oh, shit. Really? Oh,
champagne over beige.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's champagne nice, over beige.
That's a pretty nice spec. Like
soccer
that's,
mom spec. Can I say that?
Yeah. Soccer mom. Or like, it's like the grandpa spec. You know, it's not.
It is. But it was a nice car, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It came in one day, I think on a Friday, and by Monday, you opened the door on that car, and oh, it reeked. It was bad. Well, it turns out, after they ripped the interior out of the car, somebody had dumped a gallon of milk. Like, they had gone to the grocery store.
Oh, and just, like, spilled out or whatever, and they never, like, cleaned it up.
Yeah. They had to rip the interior out of that car.
Oh, my gosh.
To clean it and get it dried out and not smelling. But,
that's very crazy.
Nasty.
Yeah. Anyways.
It was a lot of pet hair. You know, I worked in Bloomfield Hills, if you know where that is, and let me tell you, they had a lot of pets out there. And shortly after that, I got my first pre-production type job. There was a job position in Michigan, and a lot of people know about it, where you literally just test drive pre-production cars for 8 hours a day.
Oh, you're right. Just like
on the road. And then that kind of began to stem my enjoyment of the new and innovative side of cars, and like kind of like that secret life of like camouflage and what's coming out next, and you know, gathering all the data to kind of improve upon the vehicle before it.
Did you ever get tired of being in the car for
It was horrible. Like I would tell people, they'd be like,
you could just only go on the highway like up and down.
I had a set route, and it was like 340 miles a day. And like I was driving cool cars. Like I drove like I did a lot of like Chrysler testing, so I drove the current, I think it's like WL, which is like the current Grand Cherokee.
Okay.
That's out now.
Okay.
So I drove that. I was driving that back in like 2018,
2019. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well before it came out in like the Ram 392 and like Gladiator before it was released.
Oh, with the V8?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay,
so like a lot of that stuff, it's really cool. And the job looks like really cool on the outside. And it's just kind of like, oh, this is fun. But then you like are working.
Get it. Yeah, you do it.
And then you're like, this sucks. Like
when your like hobby turns into a job.
Right. And, like, you know, and then it's not fun.
Yeah.
So, but I enjoyed it for the time being. It was like a nice placeholder. It was something really fun to do while I was in college. Because also while I was in college, I was on my college SAE formula team.
Oh, okay.
So we're building like the little...
Oh, you never talked about that before.
Oh, I've never told you that we were like building little formula cars?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you were in the SAE? You were on the team. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay.
So I helped out... I joined the team as a freshman.
Okay.
And I helped out the aero body side of the team.
Yeah.
And we worked on... well, I personally worked on the wing mount.
Okay.
So the year that I joined was like the first year that we kind of, as a team, we're trying to get into like the upper ranks.
Okay.
And just like real formula, Stuttgart and Two Graz are the...
So not like a Briggs & Stratton motor, but like a Hayabusa motor with like an X-Track or
so
whatever.
So we had a, I think it was like 710 cc limit. I don't know what the rule is today because it's been a while.
Yeah. That seems pretty big for...
That's big for a cart.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're really quick carts. But we had a Yamaha R6 motor the year that I was on the team.
Oh.
And it was like the first year that we really put a lot of development into CAD and CFD. Yeah. And like our plenum was CNC'd on a 5-axis machine.
Oh, wow.
And like, you know,
fancy.
I was doing, we wanted to do a swan neck wing. If you know anything about how that works, the way the physics works is that the cleaner air underneath the wing shooting up,
it's like less actually, drag, right? Yeah. And then it has like comparatively less drag but more downforce compared to like a traditional like strut mount or whatever,
right? Like the positioning of where you're mounting the wing, it's closer to the center of the vehicle, everything is kind of just nicer balanced.
I see.
You know, I could be very wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the...
I'm sure somebody will... It's the internet, so somebody will correct us.
Yeah, like, it was actually because of, you know, XYZ element of P, you know. Yeah. But, so that being on the formula team really, really kind of opened my eyes to what was possible behind the wheel, because we got to drive them, as well as, like, what I could do as a designer, what I could do as an engineer, and what, you know, everybody... what people were doing in their everyday life, you know, making fun cars fast and just kind of being really creative with it. And then that's when I got my, that's when I made my first major car purchase. I bought my little Mini Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy, you didn't know me when I had the Mini Cooper, but James did.
Which version?
I had a Cooper S hardtop.
R50.
Oh, I had a F56.
F?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So for those
of
you that...
I'm going home today and studying...
What year was it? Oh,
so F56 was 2014. Oh, okay. I consider that year, that was the year that BMW like fully took over Mini. That's when you were getting the $40,000, $50,000 Mini Coopers.
But it wasn't a John Cooper's Works.
No,
right?
I just had a base Cooper S.
Cooper. I mean, that's not a base though.
Well, it wasn't base. Well, I mean, it was a base. It was a Cooper S. With like no options.
A low, but that's like the most pure fun to drive.
And that's what people would say. Right? People would say I probably had the best one.
Manual too.
Yep, I had the, it was a 6-speed.
Yeah.
And really funny story about that. I had just picked it up and I came back to the Formula Lab one night and two of my buddies were there, Dave and Liz. And, Dave was like, you know, can I drive the car? I was like, sure. So I hopped in the back seat. You could actually fit four people in the new Mini.
Yeah, they're actually kind of spacious,
And I had just a two-door hardtop with, like, no sunroof, no nothing. It had the lighting package and the nice wheels, which is pretty much all you needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's, like, driving it. And Dave is a pretty good driver. So he's, like, heel-toeing and stuff. And he's like, I think your car is, like, rev matching. And I was like, what? And he's
did
like,
have rev match?
Look, yeah, no. So oh, car had nice. Auto rev matching, and I had no idea. Auto
that's
rev matching.
Pretty high tech for a kind of little sporty.
Yeah.
Hatchback.
And it was a 2014.
And a 14, yeah.
That
yeah.
was the first year for the F56. So it was the first year for the redesign.
Okay.
I think that was the first year for auto rev match and the 991.
Which would have probably also been the first year for the BMW, which is similar to the current one I have right now, which is a F30, which is actually a 2014. We'll get to that car eventually.
Can I just interrupt you real quick? It's funny, when you're talking about a Mini Cooper and an F designation, I immediately went to like R53, I think. What was the first
one? So the first 2001? One was R53.
R53.
That would have been like 2000 not, to like it, 2004.
Yeah.
Not to
then after
myself.
That, we got R56.
Yeah. When did they go to F designation?
It would have been 2014. So late R model Minis, so like Countrymen and stuff, they became turbo. I want to say around 2013.
All of them became turbo.
All of them became turbo.
Cool. So was yours supercharged?
No. So the early Minis, the early Cooper S's were supercharged.
Yeah, but then they went to the turbo around 06.
Not all of them.
Not all of them?
Not all of them.
The S's, maybe.
Yeah.
The
I might be a little wrong, but I'm pretty sure the turbos came later. And then for sure with the F generation, that was like a BMW B48.
Where the hell did they make these cars again?
Oh, where did they make
were
them?
Were they in the UK? Were they UK only? Or did they make them here, like in Alabama or like...
No, so they make them in the UK. I don't know if they built them here. So BMW...
Or assembled.
I think they're made in the UK.
In the UK,
they're made in the
UK.
Yeah.
We're going to have to look that one up.
Yeah.
But
anyways, sorry.
To continue on, Mini Cooper rev matching, and that was pretty much like my gateway car to then a lot of
like sports cars and just cars in general.
But then also just mischief in the city.
I see. Yeah.
Growing up in Detroit, it's very flat, so there's not a lot of canyon carving or even like there's a couple of racetracks in Michigan. There's M1, which is in Pontiac, and then there's I think it's also Waterford Hills.
Are those all NASCAR tracks?
No. M1 and Waterford Hills are like road courses.
Okay.
Or like circuits. The big NASCAR track is MIS Michigan International Speedway.
Okay.
I might have that wrong, which is also where they hold the Formula competition, the Formula SAE competition.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Where all the schools from all over the world.
Oh, the national one or international one?
I think it's international.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because that's, like I said, just like in real F1, Stuttgart and Two Graz, which are Austrian and
kick everybody's
German
ass.
Team, because they were the Formula SAE team backed by Mercedes. Of course, they were going to win. I don't know if it still holds true today. But yes, they had... probably just as much unlimited budget as the real Mercedes F1 team did at one point in time.
Yeah.
But still a fun competition to go to nonetheless, and kind of gets you into that motorsport mindset of prepping, getting everything ready. But the Formula competition was even more than just a motorsports competition. It was, can your car turn? Can it endure?
It was everything, right?
Yeah, it was also a cost analysis. So you had to do a business presentation on why this would be an effective like car to sell, you know? So there was a lot. There was a lot into it. And you had like an extensive like design and safety review before you were allowed to do any of the driving portion.
Right.
They also have the tilt table. Where
Ooh,
they'll
the like, tilt table.
They'll put your car on the table.
Like the weight.
And they like will tilt it all the way up as far as it can pretty much go.
And it's gotta stay there?
Yep. It has to be able to stay. So low CG. Okay. Also just to make sure that your fluids are not coming out. you know.
It's a student prepped car, right?
Right. So we're not allowed to have any professional help. Although I went to Lawrence Tech, they have a lot of automaker backed. We had like a lot of help from the manufacturer.
Okay.
You know, so
like advice or advisory.
Or
stuff.
Even just like actual like parts or because we had like sponsorships.
Right, and donations like, mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yeah. Who did the layup for like your wing and the fairings and stuff? Did you do that yourself? Or?
I didn't do it myself. I helped, but our body lead Morgan at the time, he pretty much instituted like all of that, and I think he even worked to pretty much get our relationship built up with Ford. Mm-hmm. So what we did is everybody was very proficient with CAD, like and in a very advanced level. Morgan pretty much designed the entire body for the car and then presented the design to Ford, and Ford CNC'd foam molds for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then we had a environmental chamber oven at school.
Oh, wow. So and was it made out of fiberglass or was it made
out
of
carbon fiber?
It was carbon fiber.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we had pre-impregnated carbon fiber.
Wow.
And probably $10,000 worth of deep freezer rolls of this carbon fiber.
Oh, my gosh.
So we would have the mold CNC'd. Then we used another local shop that did a lot of carbon fiber work, and we would hand buff the mold so that we get a really nice finish.
Yeah.
Then the molds would be baked, and then we would like vacuum bag. And then, so our airfoils on the wing, those were done on the in the environmental chamber with pre-impregnated carbon fiber. Mm-hmm. Our diffuser was done on a very large table with suction, and it was like it was
intense. Yeah, you had a bunch of hoses
and you like kind of pull the epoxy through and you let it set.
Were you hand cutting the carbon fiber, or was that CNC cut
the carbon fiber? We would hand cut it and kind of lay it in
literally with like an X-Acto knife
and then like vacuum bag it, and like it's been so long, but like getting those bags together was
pain in the ass.
It was something else.
Did you ever get a carbon splinter?
No, I didn't. I've never got a carbon splinter. I don't think I've ever gotten a fiberglass splinter.
They're not fun.
They're not fun.
I was a little too young. No, I was definitely too young. Unfortunately, my generation growing up and getting into the car scene started to move away from a lot of that built at home kind of stuff. You know, and
things just got more complicated.
It did.
Right?
It became more complicated, but then it also became easier. It's like, oh, I can just buy a body kit that's made, slap it on,
pre-made,
and it's done with minimal fiberglass and bondo work. Also, just my unique experience, because I can't speak for everybody.
Well, the quality got better too.
Yeah, they did.
Quality and then tuning, right? The plug and play.
Right. Everything became a lot more plug and play. Just in my scene and how I grew up, it was more just buy the cool car and run it, than try to build something from scratch.
Right.
Which isn't necessarily a generational thing, but just the area that I came from. It was like buy it, turbo it, you know, tune, get it as fast as you could so we could go street race at night. I never lost my license, by the way.
It's amazing. Yeah, I've you never got in jail. Never
went to jail. Never lost my license.
The statute of limitations.
Oh yeah, well beyond.
I mean, you're putting this out.
Oh yeah, they're well beyond. They what is it? They didn't see me do it, so they can't convict me.
Yeah, exactly. No double jeopardy.
Right. But yeah, so that's pretty much how I kind of got into the car scene. And it just kind of all stemmed from there. Ended up eventually moving out here to work at a private motorsports shop doing Porsche mechanic work as my first professional mechanic job. And That was very fun. That's how I met you.
Yeah, that's how you met me.
So I met James when he was driving his black GT3.
That's right. Yeah.
It was the first customer car that I worked on.
And oh, it was the first customer car that you worked on?
Thank God I didn't mess it up.
The wheels somehow still kept on that thing. So
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And thanks, you drove it pretty hard.
I did drive it really, really hard. Yeah. That was during COVID. So it was like the whole, everything was my own personal racetrack.
We did a lot of car stuff during COVID. We were outside a lot.
Yeah. It was safe.
Yeah. It was safe to be outside. Yeah. It wasn't safe to be inside, but it was very safe to be outside. Well,
you could be inside your car.
Right.
You could be outside, you know, chatting with people in parking lots.
Like, yeah. And that's totally what we did a lot of car meets. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like almost every night of the week we were doing a car meet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's pretty much my little story. I don't want to talk forever.
No, let's go with Jeremy. I like his shirt too, the 1973. Like, that thing's cool.
My parents gave me the shirt.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't own a 73 RS 2.7.
It would be nice.
That would be really cool. We could dream. So, Jeremy,
how did I get into cars?
Into cars.
It runs in the family.
Oh.
So, my dad's dad, my grandfather, was a car guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kind of a minor car guy.
Okay.
I say minor because, you know, he had some cool cars. He had like a list of cool cars long before I was born, like Chrysler Woody. He had a 21 window microbus.
Volkswagen microbus.
Those are really popular.
You know, like 50s and 60s.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that rubbed off on my dad. My dad was into British cars when he was a young man growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And
like MGs.
Yeah. So he had an Austin Healey Sprite.
Mm. Okay.
Which is like an MG midget.
Yeah.
He had, I think the most notable one, he had a convertible TVR Griffith.
Oh, he had a Griffith?
He had a Griffith.
Could you get Griffiths here?
No.
You could. Yeah.
We could.
The catch was there was no such thing as a convertible TVR Griffith. And so the legend has it. That this car in a prior life was run underneath a tractor trailer and the roof was sheared off.
Oh my God.
What?
Hopefully nothing happened to the driver, but it's all
not
part of the legend.
Right.
And so he wanted this car. And
what year is this car? 70 something?
This was, it would have been 60s.
Oh, it's
my parents
60s
were newlywed.
Okay.
And my mom was a teacher and my dad was still working his way through college.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he wanted this car and they didn't really have much money at all. Mm-hmm. My mom said, all right, you quit. He smoked cigarettes at the time. If you quit smoking, you can buy the car. He's not going to quit smoking.
Yeah.
Well, he threw the pack away and never picked him up again.
Woo.
So he got the car. And so that's just one of many. Anyways.
Sounds like he really liked working on cars because there's no way I'd buy a British car.
He still owns one today. He still has an Austin Healey today.
Wow. When did TVR pull out of the United States? I think
probably before I was born.
Yeah. Because I think about 70s. All the new TVR stuff and just how riddled with electrical.
The whole company was a basket case.
Yeah.
It's very much a niche company, too.
It is, but they make really cool cars.
I know, they make
cars.
Cool cars. They make cool cars, for sure. Yeah. But anyways, so those are kind of, I guess, the what led up to me being a car guy. So when I was a little kid, my dad had a 1950 Ford F1 pickup.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And the guy he bought it from had put a small block Chevy in it, which...
Oh, that seems like anti...
I know, like some of our
perpetrating.
Listeners...
Yeah.
Like, might be cringing right now, but the sound that truck made...
I'm sure,
is something that sticks with me to this day.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in the family.
Oh.
Really?
My brother owns it now. It's in Florida. So my dad had it, and it was just it was a work truck. You know, it was where we went to Home Depot, and my parents bought...
Damn,
I'm pretty
sure the house, right?
All of my parents' cars have blown up. Like,
well, eventually,
spontaneously combusted. There is not a single family car that has lasted
intact.
Eventually, I think the small block did blow up.
Okay,
my dad sold the truck to my uncle, and the engine was old and it died.
Mm-hmm.
So my uncle repowered it again with a Ford. I think a 302 out of like a Fox body Mustang or something.
Oh, cool.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
But it didn't have the sound.
Mm. Yeah.
It just wasn't the same. I know people are going to cringe.
No, let me tell you something. The Chevy motors, they just do something. That's why everything has an LS swap in it.
I don't think they're the best sounding.
I won't say the best. Of course, there's like better sounding.
I think
sounding
the Coyote, like the
Coyote's whatever, pretty nice.
Like
sounding.
Ford has specifically engineered that motor to sound good. Like yeah, how yeah the headers come off mm-hmm and like.
Where and it's a very unique sound.
Yeah, sure.
In today and
just
age
the velocity stacks mm-hmm a certain way with yeah induction and firing order. All you know, the thing is designed to like sound good.
I could agree. I'm not a choppy V8 kind of person.
Cammed.
Yeah.
Well, cam cars don't even do anything. Like, they don't. It's all high. Like, you're just gas mileage.
James, you can't say that.
I have so many hot takes. It's just.
You can't say that.
A cam car is so dumb.
No.
No, let Jeremy finish his story.
We'll have to have an outtake episode.
Yeah.
And we'll have to have a camshaft episode.
A camshaft episode.
We've had conversations about flat plane cams.
And right. And the difference and the like vibrations and cars rattling themselves apart.
Yeah.
But continue, Jeremy.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So this, I'm still on this Ford. My uncle got it and restored it. My uncle was a sailor.
Mm.
Right. He loved sailboats. So he knew how to work fiberglass.
Okay.
He did not know how to weld.
Oh.
Or maybe he did, but he didn't have a welder. So all of the rust repair in this truck is fiberglass.
Oh,
which
wow
has its downsides.
Right.
Sure.
But, you know, he got tired of it. And basically gave it to my brother. So my brother is the caretaker of it now. It doesn't get used much, but it's still
there,
runs and drives.
Right? It runs.
My brother and his boys just fuel injected it.
Oh,
they did one of the Phytec.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a kit.
Yeah, exactly. It's a kit. So he consulted
cool
with me a little bit
that's
about
cool
that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's, you know, make it more usable.
Right. Right.
For them. For mm-hmm. It's not fast, right?
No, at least you can start up, right? You don't have to worry
right
about a carburetor. And,
I'm not out
you know
there with like the yeah can of hairspray and like
right
well gasoline trying to
yeah
get it to
and
fire
and for
up
something that sits around most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right, right.
It's safer actually if it's you know injected or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've mm-hmm had horror stories about hearing about people not running the car for a while, then like flooding it with gas, and then there's a
oh
then kaboom.
Mid-year so CIS powered 911s.
Oh.
Ooh, that happens, huh?
With the backfiring. Yeah.
Ooh,
oh,
snap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Mm.
Anyways.
What's your first sports car?
My first sports
car. Or car, like, fun car in general? Or did you have, like, a boring car first? And
my
then
first car was a 1987 Honda Accord.
My oh first
sick
car.
With the pop-up headlights.
Oh,
wow.
My first
like
car
that
was a 2006 Acura TSX. So we drove
wait
Blenders.
What?
We
you
drove Blenders.
A, but TSX is a pretty
my
sweet
TSX
car.
My TSX had 225,000 miles on it when I
okay
bought it.
Okay, never mind.
It probably ran like new.
Oh, yeah, it did. That, it was just getting broken in.
Yeah.
The bumper was falling off.
Yeah.
It was black on cream interior. But I drove the wheels.
It had a cream interior?
Car. Yeah.
Ugh.
With like brown wood. It was
no
definitely like the.
It had wood?
Yeah. Well,
like plastic wood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't real wood grain, but
it's painted wood.
Yeah. So my first sports car was a 1987 944S
oh
that I bought off my brother.
A 1987 94S?
944.
944S.
Yes. The
ooh
twin cam.
Mm-hmm. Not turbo.
Non-turbo, twin cam, led a rough life.
Five sure speed, right?
I think
five
they
speed
all did.
Five speed.
I think every yeah 944 was
yeah
used and abused, especially for how much they were
but
and
they,
how much people like
much
hated those
new
cars.
How
yeah
much they were new
they
were really expensive.
They were. I think
yeah
in the late 80s, that was a...
It was a hot car.
$30,000, $35,000.
Yeah, which is a lot.
Car.
Yeah, which is a lot of, yeah, you know, that was a lot of money for a car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was, it's a, that was my...
For a 911, or not for a 911, for a Porsche that didn't have the engine in the back.
Yeah.
Especially, you know.
Yeah.
It was a slow car, but it was extremely well balanced.
That's what...
Because it has
transaxle
a... Transaxle, that's right.
Torque
yeah
tube.
Transaxle, torque tube.
It dropped a valve, and so that ooh was my introduction mm-hmm to working on cars.
It's quite the start.
How was working on that car?
It wasn't that bad, really.
Yeah, because everything's right up front.
I mean,
it's a four-cylinder, so it wasn't like...
Yeah, access was easy. The
room,
biggest
yeah
thing was the water pump had leaked, right? So
Was that like an engine out thing, or was that like more
no
of a
no
pain
I did
in
it all bay? All in bay.
Oh, okay.
Or in the engine
this
bay.
This is when you could work on the engine bay of a car.
Yeah, you have to take off a bunch of plastic and, you know.
Or, you know, the new 911s, you can't even see the engine. You just have to believe that it's there.
Yeah.
And that it's working.
Well, the new 911, it's, what, a bumper out service to change the air filter?
Ever since 991.
Ever since
991. And I can attest to it because I have done a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had that. I had an E36 M3 after that.
Which, cool.
Oh, interesting story. The current owner of that E36 M3 recently reached out to me.
Oh!
The car is still... I bought it. It was somebody's garage queen, so it was, like, pristine.
Okay.
I kept it a few years and sold it. It's still a garage queen, although it's getting used properly now.
Okay.
But I guess when I say garage queen, it's in really good shape. Mm-hmm. The guy that owns it is in Southern California.
Oh, wow.
He found my name on some paperwork in it. Uh-huh. All the records are still with the car.
Uh-huh.
And reached out to me.
Found you online.
And you're like, where are you in the world?
I'm he had my phone number.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
it was on a receipt.
Oh, wow.
And my phone number is still the same.
That goes to show how easy it is to get your information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, E36 M3.
Yeah.
Was that the Euro? So we got the U.S. spec.
So it was the U.S. spec S50, which is not the real S50.
Okay, so me and Jeremy are BMW people now, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking S50 like everybody in the world knows what an S50 is.
Explain it to us very briefly, Jeremy.
So BMWs with S designations before their engines are M engines.
Mm-hmm.
Even though
M motorsport engines.
Yeah, motorsport engines.
Mm.
And the S50 was the, E36 M3 engine.
Right.
The European versions had individual throttle bodies. Mm-hmm. And I think it was actually a different block. I think the U.S. spec S50 was more or less a warmed over.
Was the capacity still the same? Was it like a 2.5 liter?
Or? It was a 3 liter.
3 liter.
Are there 3 liters?
They came, if I'm not mistaken, I might be misremembering this. They came out of a different 3 series that we already had here.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, but we didn't get the better M3 motor for E36, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah.
It was still a fun car.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Still a fun car.
And the values of those are going up as we speak.
Yeah. They stayed low for a long time.
They were really cheap cars for a long time.
I think so were 944s.
Well, yeah.
944s too, yeah.
I think E36 and 944 both kind of speak to a turning point for BMW and Porsche at the time, you know, mm-hmm. where Porsche was experimenting. And I feel like E36 isn't the most loved. It wasn't the most loved M3.
I think that's true. It's still not the most loved M3.
Yeah, I think... Shortly after when we got E46, people were like, oh my God.
Well,
yeah.
Look at the values of E46s.
Well, let me tell you something. In my childhood, there was a game called Need for Speed Most Wanted. And this is why you can't buy an E46 for less than $50,000. Yes, it was in the video game. The hero car was this is why I love
it. It was a DTM car.
It was a DTM. It was, I guess, considered a GT500 car or like Super GT. But it was the E46 M3 GTR. The homologated street car, there's only 5 of them in the entire world. And it is an E46 with a V8, as it should have been.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that. Continue, Jeremy.
Where was I? My next one, I had a free 924S.
Okay.
A 924S.
So you imagine a skinny fendered 944 mm-hmm. with the 8-valve engine. That's what that was.
So it's still a 4-banger.
Still a 4-banger.
Yeah.
Ugly car.
Yeah, they didn't look great.
No, but it was so much fun.
Okay.
Especially because it was free.
Because isn't the lore of the 924 like a failed VW project or something?
Exactly. It was a car that
VW was going to make.
VW Audi.
It was like a joint venture.
Didn't want to make.
And
so Porsche picked it up.
Yeah, they basically like gave it to Porsche, like, oh, you guys are going to go bankrupt, so like, here's just take this.
Yeah,
something exactly. of that nature.
So it was
like
late 70s mm-hmm. into...
Because it had a bunch 81. Of like Scirocco VW stuff on
it. Yeah.
Like a lot of that car was VW.
Yes.
And it reappeared in the US in 87 and 88 mm-hmm. as the S. And
oh, that's what happened.
944 motor. So the 2.5 liter, 8-valve. Yeah, single cam.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh.
It was fun. It's another project.
And that was a transaxle too, right?
It was basically the same as the 944.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that gets me up through 2007.
Oh, we're almost to 2024.
I know, right?
All right. Well, let's, James, what is your history? Yeah.
My history with cars, or like, how did I get in cars?
Yeah. How'd you become a
My parents were always kind of like indirectly into cars. Like my dad had a 87. Do you remember like the Mazda Protege? It was like a hatchback.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? I forgot what they used to call it. Before they called it like 3.5.
It was a Protege, wasn't it?
Was it just called a Protege?
Yeah, I don't know how far.
Before the Protege.
Was there something before the Protege?
It was an 87, so I don't know what they called
it. Was it not a 3.23?
3.23. Oh,
yeah, because they had 3.23. They also had the...
It was a 3.23, 6.26, yeah.
And the 9.29.
Yeah.
Wait, there was a 9.29?
There was a 9.29. It was a luxury car.
That was Japan only, though. Or it came here?
Yeah, because we also had the 6.26 here as well.
Another uncle of mine had a 9.29.
Was it rotary or no?
I don't think so.
I feel like in Japan they had like a luxury rotary.
I will tell you exactly what it's called.
Yes.
It is called the...
I'm talking about
the Yunos Cosmo.
The Yunos Cosmo.
It was a two-door luxury automatic three-rotor twin turbo Mazda thing. And it's really funny that you bring that up.
You are a walking encyclopedia.
I was just looking them up the other day because I want to buy one.
It's the hyperinflation, you know, Japanese auto manufacturer, you know, the 80s and 90s.
But yeah, so this was probably one of the cooler rotaries that Mazda built. We never got them here. And I think if you want to buy one right now, it's like, they never came manual. I don't think they ever came manual. And for a nice one, it's like $40,000, $50,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a lot. That's
for
a
three
lot of
rotor
money
where the parts probably don't exist. And you're
people probably buy it just for the three rotor.
Oh yeah, because like there's no other I don't think there's any other production three rotor thing out there that you could easily obtain.
I think there's like some shop in Australia or New Zealand that like builds three rotors though, and like they're the main. Maybe Connecticut or something like that.
I'm pretty sure there's like places and you know, but it's gonna cost you.
It's gonna cost you.
You know, we're not all robbed down. We do not have unlimited supplies of rotors and rotor cars. But continue, James.
Yeah. So my dad had a 5-speed. I guess it was a Protege, a 3.23 Protege, a red one, and I just loved driving that as a kid. Like he would just drive it back and forth between our house and the train station. We lived in Chicago at the time, and then my mom had a Ford Explorer. Like an 01 Ford Explorer. Or no, not 01. I'm sorry, a 1994 Ford Explorer.
So this is before the Ford Explorer got big.
Yeah, it was like
it was
still kind of
body
on frame truck. You know, big knobby tires or whatever. And this was the cool, it had a sunroof. And it had a car phone.
Oh.
Yeah. Like you know, like you could
did not know Ford Explorers came with car phones.
Either she installed it or it came with one. And she used to use that thing all the time. Like, this was before like distracting driving and stuff like that was like a thing. She was always on that
Mom
thing.
Was just like, hello, I'm on my way to the bank right now.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Grocery store girl.
Yeah, I grew up in the back of that car a lot.
Tell me about in the back of that car. I had a friend's mom that had one of those, and she'd drive us to school. And it had a lap belt in the back, right? There were no shoulders.
Yeah, they had lap belts.
And that belt would like lock and it would just keep getting tighter and
it was
tighter
tight
tighter.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on, either like the vibration of the car would just continuously to get it tighter.
There's probably like some recall out there. Passenger gets broken in half.
Oh man,
an accident. We need to figure out this lap belt.
Typical Ford stuff. But anyways, after that my dad was making good money. He was in finance. And then he decided to get, like, upgrade. And we got I think it was a Mercedes, either a 300E or a 190E.
Oh.
This was, like, the first year, I think, for 300E. Because I think that was, like, 1990. Yeah, around the same time, 1994, 1995.
Okay.
That would have been, like, first year
W201. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That was a cool car. That was like champagne on tan.
Mercedes had like from that generation.
It had like the wipers on the headlights or whatever. I have pictures.
That's how you know you
somewhere.
Have money.
1994. So the listeners are going to correct us all. It was probably after the naming scheme change. So it would have been an E320. Yeah, I think E320, right?
Was it E320 after that year? Or was it E300? Oh, like from 91 to 93 was E300 and then... 94, 95.
91 to 93 would have been 300E.
Right. So and it must have been a 93 then.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
I am not versed in the Mercedes world, so...
We were, like, a Mercedes people. Like, after that point, we were Mercedes people. So we moved my dad was in finance, so we moved to London for we lived there for about 4 years, and like he really wanted another Mercedes, mm-hmm. but he wanted like a big body Benz. Mm. But the roads there were so small, but he was like American and wanted like he didn't want like a small
B-road.
Like the Ford, like a Ford Festiva, you know, Honda, whatever, like Vauxhall, whatever, like mm-hmm. all these like tiny, like their version of K cars, right? So my dad went to the Mercedes-Benz dealership of London, mm-hmm. and he told the sales guys, like, what is the biggest car I can get? Like, oh, sir, we have the brand new S500. Would you care to take a look at it? And he's like, sold. White car.
W140,
white. So, but the thing was, in Europe they had a short wheelbase and a long wheelbase. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in the States we only got the long wheelbase.
Yes, we laugh because Jeremy literally just picked up one of these for how much money?
500. You're right. We only got the long wheelbase.
Yeah.
But
you could get the V6, cars, the S320. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could get a short wheelbase, right?
I just bought a white W140 last October.
Are you serious?
I rescued it.
You still have it?
Yeah.
It's my daily. Well, when I don't ride my bike, it's my daily commuter to work.
Oh, dude, that's like my childhood dream. Like my childhood dream car.
I saved it from the scrapyard.
Yeah,
$1,500.
They're amazing cars. Like even to this, it had automatic closed boot. Yeah. It had automatic door, like door locking and everything.
The automatic or powered rear view mirror.
Powered rear view mirror. Dude, the thing, like the option, like it was a fully optioned car. Mm-hmm. And the thing was so baller. Like everybody thought my dad was like a gangster, in the mafia, like an American, because he had a really thick New York accent mm-hmm. too. And just people would just assume American, giant white body, big body Benz, just assumptions everywhere. And then for my mom's like birthday or something like that, we were you know, he was doing pretty well, and he bought a SL320
convertible.
R129,
yeah,
but it was a 320, so it wasn't the 500. Okay. And I just remember like the grates on it. Mm-hmm. It was red on, I think it was red on black or red on gray, and it had these like, you know, black grates and stuff like that. Mm. And he had the hard top with it or whatever. Dude, that car was also pretty baller. It's a
beautiful
too.
Car,
I bet.
Yeah, super comfortable, like big seats, just everything about that car was so luxurious. And then. Those were pretty much the cars that we had in London. And then I really started getting into cars like when I turned 16. Mm-hmm. I got a Subaru Legacy GT.
Ooh.
It was a 2.5 liter turbo.
Yeah,
it was not a spec B.
Was that a flat four or flat six?
Flat four.
Flat four, yeah.
The flat six was the 3.0R.
Yes, yeah. And you could get it, the 3.0R. But that came, what did that come in? There was the Subaru Coupe
the Legacy,
thing.
Right?
Yeah,
the SVX.
The SVX. And you could
that
also
was
get
earlier
it.
Though. My Legacy was an 08.
Yeah, but you could also get it in the Legacy as well.
But I heard that the car that I got, it was a Subaru Legacy 2.5 liter turbo limited.
Mm-hmm.
As a 5-speed, mm-hmm. there's only 3 of them in the country in that year.
Wow.
Black.
Wow.
Only 3 of them.
Wow.
And I destroyed that car.
I bet you did. Like everybody else who had one.
I just oh my God. Because it had the STI motor. It only made about 250 horsepower. But it had torque though, because it had like the little twin scroll mm-hmm. Turbo on it.
And it was a good looking sedan.
It was a good, like perfectly sized, all wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Just the biggest problem with that car, the reason why I would probably, if I were to do it all over again, get the spec B, was the 5-speed that came in. It was just dog.
And
it was,
I remember hearing
horrible.
About
the synchros would never, like, were so slow. So you'd like try to like slam the gear, and then like the synchro couldn't keep up with you. Mm-hmm. And it was just, the car would.
Yeah, that's a problem I had with my dad's Mustang, because I was like the first car I learned how to drive manual on. It was definitely like,
it just literally would go in gear.
You had to hesitate in neutral and then go into gear.
Yeah, it was like, so strange.
I want you to be a race car driver.
Horrible, because the spec B, which still had the same power, maybe had like 10 horsepower more,
mm-hmm.
Had the STI 6-speed. I think mm-hmm. it was a get transmission.
Okay,
either that. Yeah, I think it was like a German transmission. So that was like my car that really got me into cars. But even before that, I had all the car magazines, like Car and Driver, Super mm-hmm. Street, Need for Speed, all those video games. Mm-hmm. you know, like just like in London, I saw a blue Diablo 6.0 or whatever. Or no, before the 6.0, I think it was a VT. Mm-hmm. And I told my dad to just chase after that car. Like, just keep
follow
it. That and the thing was just so, like, it's like none, like in the sea of like, you know, it's like eco cars mm-hmm. and, you know, limit, you know.
Yeah, because this was during the time of front wheel drive economy, everything.
Yeah, this was 99, I think, or 90. Yeah. This was either 97 or 98. And just seeing that thing on the road, on the highway in London was just like, just seeing it like a unicorn. Like, what mm-hmm. is that thing? And it was yeah. fast. It was loud. It was so cool. So, like, ever since then, I was always into cars, mm-hmm. did everything. But the problem with being in Chicago was the weather was terrible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So having, yeah. like, a dedicated sports car was, like, really, really hard.
Yeah,
like,
it was the same problem in Michigan. Yeah. And I remember, like, a very pivotal moment where I was like, dang, I really like cars. We were going down 75 towards like downtown Detroit. And this was probably like the first time I saw a supercar in the wild. And it was a yellow 360.
Oh, and I Ferrari was like, 360.
Yeah. Ooh. I was like, yeah. Oh, now I just still really want a 360. It was a yellow convertible 360. And I would never forget seeing that car.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, yeah. it's kind of funny how we take cars like that for granted here. Cause you go to
car show. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bay Area. Yeah. Bay Area cars everyone, and coffee.
Oh, it's,
oh let me just pull up in my Pagani that I yeah. daily drive.
Yeah.
Or Chiron. One of my, right.
Yeah.
One
right. of my Bugatti four, but one of four Bugatti Chirons I have.
It's really funny.
We live in a bubble when it comes to car culture.
Totally
I think like SoCal definitely has their own car culture, but mm-hmm. Northern California, because of the tech money and yeah. things like that.
Yeah.
It's just like even there. It's just like the hidden, like the unknown billionaire.
Yeah,
just will show just up show with a McLaren F1,
right? And it's just because, and they you know? They pull it out every special occasion. Also, just here in the Bay Area, is every single Porsche GT car that has ever sure. existed.
Yeah. yeah,
everybody has.
They're great
one.
Cars.
They're wonderful. Cars. Yeah. But everybody here has one.
yeah.
Do you still have yours?
No, I sold. So I had a 991.1 GT3. It was a 2015, so I had that what do you call it, that finger follower issue where like it would just spontaneously combust and
yes.
yeah. lose oil pressure and mm-hmm. the whole car would just explode.
Which Porsche had like a whole warranty.
That's a
for
whole
that.
Another. We could talk about that for like a whole another episode. Mm-hmm. Mine never exploded, but I sold that car. I bought it in like July or June of 2020, like mm-hmm. deep into pandemic, mm-hmm. and it was from Mazda Marin. I love this story. So it was Mazda Marin. Like Lord. No. What I did was like I was just super bored. I had a Dodge Hellcat Charger. Mm-hmm. That's a whole another story too. And I took it on the track. I took that Dodge to Laguna Seca, mm-hmm. and the car was such a dog. Like it was driving like a sofa. Yeah. On track, and just all these like little BMWs and Porsches were just like whizzing by me. I was like, dude, I have 707 horsepower. What?
And I'm not going anywhere.
This is stupid. So right after that, I got onto Auto Tempest because mm-hmm. it like aggregates. It goes through like car gurus and a bunch
yes,
of other people.
Yes.
And I literally typed in Porsche 911. I think it was GT3 or it was just 911. And I just said cheap. Like uh-huh. the cheapest sort of by
the
cheap.
Give me the cheapest one.
Literally.
You got.
And I was like, oh, there's this 2015 911. I never knew about the GT3, really. Like, then I saw, like, from Chris Harris mm-hmm. when, because that year of 991 GT3 was the first year for automatic only. Mm-hmm. Like, it was right. PDK mm-hmm. only.
Right.
It was first for, it was not Metzger motor.
Right.
Right. It was, I think it was direct injection too. And then also had rear wheel steer and electric steering. That yep. was like
that was
the
like
big change for 991 GT3.
Because
mm-hmm. the 997 was still Metzger motor, was no rear wheel steer, still hydraulic steering.
Yeah. Still manual.
Was
2015 the first year for the 991 GT3?
14.
14.
A 14 model year, but maybe in Europe they were getting them in 13.
Okay.
A little earlier, yeah.
Yeah. I think we were getting model year 14 and a half, maybe. Because mm-hmm. there are a lot of 2014s. There's a lot of 2014s and a lot of 2015s. There's no 2016s.
Right.
Very, very rare 2016s.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, so I find, like, I go to Mazda Marin, and it's like, it's not Mazda Marin. Mm-hmm. It's like, the guy who owns Monster Marin, like the father, mm-hmm. it's the son's dealership.
Oh.
And he's got this like Euro, you know, buying cars at auction thing going on or whatever. Like
some extra space.
You know, there's like a Land Rover for sale, G-Wagon, a 6 Series mm-hmm. that has like kind of clapped out and has 80,000 miles. And then just sitting in the showroom mm-hmm. was a black on black GT3 991.1. And it only had like 15,000 miles. Hmm. I'm like, what? What is like? And he had it priced at like 115 mm-hmm. or 100. I like knocked him down, of course.
Right.
But it was a stripper spec. It had, didn't have a bucket, carbon buckets, didn't have that.
The sport seats.
Steel brakes, big gas tank, and front nose lift were the only options on it. No.
So basically like, really usable for
yes,
this area.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
The one regulars, that you could drive every day. And you could, be like,
yeah. The one you, yeah.
Dang.
Like, not even the electric seats. It had like the manual
right.
manual seats or right. whatever. I think know. It just had sport.
You didn't
it
have to worry electric, about like, a rock in your carbon ceramic brakes.
Yeah.
You know,
no crazy stitching, no Porsche in the head crest and the headrest. It was like literally probably the lowest option car.
The perfect track ever.
And it was like a one owner car that was bought new in LA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and somehow it made its way to Northern California. I think mm-hmm. it was a two-owner car.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's a funny story about that, too. The second owner is Silicon Valley.
Okay.
SVG or whatever.
Oh, those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a previous owner for that car.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was the one that put another 10,000 miles on it.
Oh.
And I think they were trying to sell it, but mm-hmm. never sold, because it's such a low option car for... A Porsche on the used car market for a GT3, that those like having no option on it is basically unsellable.
Yeah.
Of course, me, it was just like, you know, yeah, I'm now, that. I'm getting now that.
People want like.
So I bought it. I bought it for like 112 or something like that, mm-hmm. or 130. Yeah. I was like, it was, they were trying to get it away, for, like try to sell for 120, and I knocked mm-hmm. them down to 112 because it was just the options on it were so bad, or like very, you know, very minimal options. And I just.
Right.
Drove the crap out of it, right? Like mm-hmm. I did a bunch of suspension work to it, got
right.
a big brake kit, mm-hmm. And then I put 35,000 miles on it,
yeah,
to basically 45,000 miles, mm-hmm. and I sold it for basically the same price I bought it,
yeah,
in 2021. Like late 2021.
Porsches are probably nice. Like the only cars you can do that with.
Dude, it was so funny. Like I financed a car and I owed like 90 on it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I got like 20,000 back. What the
f? So sick. So sick.
Can you do that anymore?
Yeah. I mean, if you do it yeah. right, because like if you, Porsches are climbing, they
if you,
will
if
not
you
stop.
Could buy a GT car at MSRP, I guess you could flip it.
Yeah, like
for money.
The next day. But even if you drove it for an entire year and put
and still get money out of it.
You still get money out of it.
That's so crazy to me, man. That's,
yeah, which is like
I don't think there's any other car brand that you can do that. Maybe save Ferrari.
But you'd have to get Ferrari, the right like, Ferrari in the right color with the right options.
It couldn't be a Roma. It couldn't yeah. be a T. It couldn't not even SF90s are just they can't get rid of them.
They can't. So if like, you tried to do with any other car, it'd have to be like the Ferrari that everybody wants. So it'd have to be like an
Daytona, 812.
Or a, you know, one of the front engine V12 Ferraris. You bought it cheap yeah. or you bought it at MSRP. Yeah. You drove it for the year.
Yeah.
And because they always come out with a new one that's always more expensive, it'll always drive up the value
yeah.
of yours.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember there was a point in time where the F12 Berlinetta came out and they were like, I don't know what the MSRP on it was, but they had got to
they're
like,
expensive.
Right. But they had got down to like low
200s?
No, 150s. You could pick up
what?
The F12 for like one. This was like 2016, 2018, like a while ago. You could
okay.
pick up an F12 for like 150 grand.
Well, because the service, the car too, was just like
exactly
12 cylinder Ferrari.
Yeah. Right.
Where like each spark plug is like your, you know, firstborn child or something like that. It's so stupid.
It's a sacrifice. But now, F12s are 200-300, you know.
Wait, they came back up?
Yeah, they came way back up. Back
Why?
Up to like two. Well, COVID did a lot of that.
Okay.
But then also just because when the A12 came out and then, you know, now we have the 12 cylindre or cylindre.
Oh,
the 12
yeah, the new
cylinder.
One.
Yeah. But as these cars get more and more expensive and people yearn more and more for the old.
Naturally, you know, aspirated.
We'll definitely get into that in our next podcast where, you know, I'll go into more of my life at Volkswagen Group and electrification and what it's kind of doing to the automotive industry. But with all of that in mind, people want those old analog feeling
oh, sure.
cars.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah. Wow, we're coming up on time, aren't we?
We are. Wow, but
that was
almost
an hour.
Yeah. Wow. But now
time
everybody
flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Everybody knows about us now.
I think, relatively speaking, yeah.
Yeah, they're gonna get to know us even more.
I mean, if you really want to get to know us, just find us at like Alice's or like a car show. Like,
yeah,
we're just around in the Bay Area.
We're always,
yeah, we're always lurking.
We'll be at Cars and Coffee.
Where tomorrow. Are we driving right now?
Oh, okay. So what are we driving right now?
Yeah,
I have a mom mobile. I have a Volvo XC90.
Yeah, yeah.
To pick up all 7 of my children that I don't have.
Sure.
And then I also have a big turbo F30 that probably
it's a single turbo, right?
Single turbo.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably makes like 500 horsepower. Constantly, not constantly has issues. It has issues every once in a while.
Constantly broken.
As a modified, it was broken last weekend. It's running right now though. Very good.
Tell the audience what an F30 is.
Oh, so I have a 2014 335i.
Right.
Yes, that is for the non-car people.
And originally, it came stock with a twin turbo motor, right?
Nope.
That was a single motor.
That was the E chassis 3 series.
Oh,
the F chassis 3 series was the introduction of the twin scroll turbo single turbo setup. I'd probably kill myself if I had an N54 because they are not the easiest things to work on.
Okay.
Or tune.
Is it an N50?
So I have an N55, which was then superseded by a B58,
right?
Which is 2 cylinders more than the B48 that was in my Mini Cooper.
Oh,
BMW.
Was it kind of the same block, but they just extended it?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you got to save money somewhere. Man. So
cheap.
Jeremy, what are you driving right now? You have a whole plethora of vehicles.
I have a fleet. So I've got an illness. Cheap cars are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because they're fun to play with,
right?
And fix up,
exactly.
And you don't worry about them
because they were cheap.
So today I'm driving a 2013 Boxster.
Ooh.
How many miles does Boxster have on
base? Boxster base, 6-speed manual, lightly optioned.
You can see
I want
it's outside.
One
in mahogany metallic with a brown top. It's my wife's car.
Oh, I love it.
It has 205,000 miles on it.
Are you serious?
It costs less than half the going rate for 2013 Boxsters.
Wow.
So that's just what I'm driving today.
It's a six. Is it a 6-cylinder or is it the 4-banger?
No, it's a dot one. So
it's a dot one.
It's a 6.
Okay, it's a 6.
Yeah. I've got a 991.1. Also a base.
911.
Mm-hmm. It's low mileage.
Okay.
It's a garage queen.
Yeah.
I have a 93 850
CSI. Oh, yeah. I've seen pictures of
that. Daytona Violet.
Yes. My dream car.
Yeah. Is for another episode, but
yeah,
you know,
talk about
saying,
broken BMWs.
Don't meet your heroes. Hey, I've got new injectors and a new fuel pump for it sitting
here.
So
12 cylinder, I think it has twin fuel pumps.
So
two ECUs.
Essentially, everything is split
right
from the fuel pump because
it's 16 bit, right? Like back in the day, they didn't have 32 bit processor.
It's just all joined at the crankshaft,
yeah,
right. Which everybody had fun doing. They're like, oh, we need a bigger motor, we're just gonna put two of our good motors together and give it two of everything.
Yeah. And then it's not as good.
Not
or
as
reliable.
Good.
It's archaic, really. I mean, it was like the ultimate in BMW technology at the time, but it's...
But a gorgeous car and very well forgotten. Like nobody...
Yeah. The best way I could compare like those types of cars were like Porsche 928s with the V8
mm-hmm.
and the dog leg 4-speed or 5-speed
because
I had this weird mixture of like fuel injected V8 but like analog steering and a dog leg, you know, 5-speed and then like an electric hatch.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the combination of stuff
is
so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the car drives great. I'm sure that car drives like nothing else on the road, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big
GT.
Comfy GT cruiser.
With a 6-speed manual.
With a 6-speed manual.
Yeah, which is
V12
pretty cool.
Manuals are...
Not many V12 manuals.
Right.
Not too many. So there's that, and then there's... we already mentioned my W140.
Mm-hmm.
500
Sick.
SEL.
Right.
First year.
It's a SEL?
It's an SEL.
Ooh.
Yeah. Long wheelbase.
Ooh. Extra long. I've seen it. It's pretty long car.
How many is that?
That's all of them except for
the Ioniq 5.
The Ioniq 5.
How do you like the Ioniq 5?
It's a great appliance.
Okay, so it's A to B.
It's A to B.
Get in, forget about it.
If you
want
a thrill, you can romp down on the throttle and it accelerates fast.
The Maytag.
I've wanted an Ioniq 5.
Yeah.
I think they're really cool.
You can lease them cheap now.
Yes.
Oh, how much? Like $300 a month?
Or we'll get into less that. Than that.
Really?
Let me tell you something. The EV market at the moment.
That's what I tell everybody. If they want to buy an electric car, just lease it. Like, finance
perfect.
It.
Oh, yeah. Perfect deal.
Lease absolutely. The tech doesn't stop. It doesn't stay still, right?
Yeah.
It's another reason to lease it.
Yeah exactly. James, what are you?
Where am I driving right now? I'm driving a BMW M3 F80. The model year is 2017.
Nice.
Fully, I mean, that whoever bought it, whoever optioned it or bought it new from
every box.
MSRP, the depreciation on that car is just nuts. Like, I think the person had, I think base it was like 60 or 70, mm-hmm. and the guy put like $20,000 worth of options on it. Like the comp package was mm-hmm. like another $5,000. The sunroof was like 3 or something, 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
It had the lighting package, executive package. So like mm-hmm. all the window shades in the right. back and stuff like that.
Everything.
But you know how
in
cheap.
M3.
You know, I got a thing about BMW. Okay, uh-huh. like sometimes they're great, right? Great cars, uh-huh. ultimate driving machine,
right?
But dude, you're paying $90,000 for a 3 Series. Could you at least put memory seats on the passenger side?
It does not have memory seats.
It doesn't have memory
Mine doesn't
seats.
Either. No. Mine only has memory on the driver, and I have a free, fully loaded 3
Series. I feel like a lot of German, like VW does that too. On my Golf, so I had a 2019 Golf R.
Uh-huh.
I had full electric seats on the driver's side, but manual seats on the passenger side.
Oh yeah, no, the 991 is they are not driving. You do not need
what the F.
Yeah.
991's memory only on the driver's side as well.
Yeah, no. Well, my Swedish Volvo has memory seats, 3 position on driver and passenger.
Swedes, man, they gotta be comfy.
But then also it's a sports car, so they think about it as like you're not they're like, why are you gonna have more than one person in the
four-seater, girlfriend has to keep adjusting her seat when other people are like in the seat, and she gets a little like frustrated, like you know.
You're gonna make me go home and open the passenger door on the 850.
Oh,
it has to have memory.
I would assume.
We gotta find out.
But I'll be honest, I don't know. I gotta go look.
I mean, that was $100,000 car back then.
Back what year was it again?
93.
Yeah, I mean, that car was expensive.
Oh, yeah.
They were expensive.
Really expensive, especially the 12-cylinders. And I feel like you could get that car with, like, a fax machine in it. It was, like, that kind of... You know what I'm saying? It was, like, that kind of car. It had a telephone.
They did have the BMW car
phone. Fax machine.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure. I'm serious.
For sure, the E30... I don't know about the E32. The E38 7 Series.
They had a fax machine in it. I swear to God.
There was a fax machine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an option. Like, you're an important German CEO driving on the Autobahn.
I must fax some.
Yeah.
I must send out my paperwork right
now.
100%.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's there's a really... I got to find it somewhere on YouTube, but there was a story about... It was a Porsche story.
Mm-hmm.
They were interviewing somebody that owned a Porsche Turbo from new. I forgot if it was a 997.1 or it was like a 996 turbo,
mm-hmm.
but he owned it from new, put like 300,000 kilometers on it,
mm-hmm.
and he owned like a consulting business, and instead of flying, he would drive everywhere, and he had a fax machine and a telephone in it.
He was doing it big.
And he was just literally on the road for like 10 hours a day, just up and down the Autobahn, just flat, like
living the dream.
You know, they could look at all his logs and stuff. Mm-hmm. He was doing like 200 miles an hour.
Oh,
there's also that old famous story of like somebody owning like a McLaren F1,
mm-hmm.
and he, on his like daily commute, he was hitting 200 like every day. Because I think because McLaren could monitor the car remotely, like mm-hmm. very early, right?
Right.
Yeah. It was like one of the first car manufacturers that could do that.
Mm-hmm.
They called him and said, hey, your car's misfiring.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to fly somebody out and fix it. And they mm-hmm. looked up like the logs of like how often, like mm-hmm. how the car was running. And they were seeing, VMAX, like every day VMAX, VMAX,
hey,
VMAX
hey.
For like... For a sustained period of time,
the German Autobahn,
like 15 minutes, this guy was at 200.
To the durability of those engines,
right? Really. I mean, well, which
it was a BMW motor,
it was,
right?
It was very similar to the motor that you have in your car, a much higher.
No, I mean, like architecture.
Sure, yes.
I think the block was the same or similar, but it was a twin cam,
right?
It had a lot more going different on. Stuff on
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Gordon Murray was like the spec was I wanted something to weigh I forget how many kilos. It's like 200 kilos or 300 kilos and make 550 horsepower. But like BMW M apologized and said, "Oh, sorry, Mr. Gordon Murray. We the engine weighs a little bit more, but it makes 600 PS." I think it makes more than that. I think it made like 620.
And
or
a very gorgeous
like
looking motor at that too, with the roof scoop and everything. So
Cool car. Yeah,
cool car.
Anyways,
very cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, we're going to wrap this up.
Yeah, we're going to wrap.
We're going to talk about the future of electrification next.
Okay.
The next time we all meet again.
Boo, electrification.
Yeah, you want your screaming loud V8.
No, it's there's coming. Something there's it's, something to be said about a car that can blow away a demon.
Sure.
Right.
Silently.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially I'm not going
to
argue.
I know there's a lot of people.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about the
disagree
new charger.
With me on this.
I think the future of cars will definitely be electric and electrification, but at the same time, of course, enthusiasts.
I disagree, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
But we'll find out next time.
On the next episode.
Next time. All right.
Bye. See everybody later. Bye. Cool. Good job, everybody.